The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth.
Hey! Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday, June 20th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and it's got to be summertime here in the Northern Hemisphere. Welcome to a beautiful solstice day, at least here in Portland, Oregon. We're glad to have you here, coming to you live from Rolla-J Studios right here in beautiful Portland, Oregon. We got a studio crew here bringing you all of the latest news and views in marijuana, starting off with Wiz Kaliko over here in the co-host chair. How you doing?
Aloha. Doing quite
to
well
see
today.
You. All right. And we've got political news we'll be getting to in hour two that I know Kaliko is just, he's wound up today.
I wound up pretty tight.
I was all over MSNBC this morning.
Oh, I'm sure.
All over it. All over it.
We got Ganja John over here in the engineer chair as well.
Living sport, it like it's legal.
Sporting the purple. I love the
all
Ganja
purple,
John show.
Baby. All purple.
Love the shirt there.
Thank you.
Tell folks
gang.
Where you can get some of that stuff.
You can get
stuff.
These at handmadeapparel.biz. These ones aren't available yet. These are crew shirts. They say living like it's legal on the back, but I think we're going to have a lot of them for HempFest.
Yeah, we got some National Cannabis Radio shirts coming as well. We just got those ordered today. We'll have those available for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. We are headed there this weekend, and we're all getting antsy about it, man. We can't wait to get down and see our friends in the Bay Area and bring you live coverage here at National Cannabis Radio Saturday and Sunday from noon to 10 p.m. Check it out. Also joining us in our virtual studio from Astoria, Oregon, is our news director, Carrie Gallagher. How you doing, Carrie? Do we have Carrie?
Hi, Russ.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. I think we're having...
Can you not hear me?
We hear you, but we hear you from the bottom of a well. I think we're having an internet issue.
Maybe. I think I might try to reboot and meet you on the Cannabis Chronicles.
All right. We'll see you there for the Cannabis Chronicles. Carrie's got the latest headlines for us today. We're going to take a look at the country of Uruguay that is looking at the cannabis industry. Eric Holder is being grilled by Congress over this Fast and Furious scandal. We'll take a look at that and more news in the Daily Cannabis Chronicle. Also coming up at our 20 after break, we are going to get to our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tune. Today, Wiz Kaliko is going to tackle that. So what do we got for our tune today?
Well, considering it's the beginning of summer and I like to bitch every once in a while, we're going to play a song called Cool Me Down because it's already too hot for me.
It's by this
group called the Black Seeds who are on Easy Star Records at easystar.com, and they've been awesome to us, so we would like to give them a little love here today.
All right, and that also is a nice segue into tonight's show at 8 o'clock live here Pacific Time. You'll get to see the Irie Island Hour, what's happening in Irie Island time.
That's right. Basically, we're going to play a bunch of summer songs. We're just going to play a bunch of stuff that gets us ready for sunshine and good times, and we got some reggae remixes as well as some reggae covers that I'm going to start to try to make part of the show, so looking
all
forward
right.
to it.
We'll have an Irie good time for the first day of summer right here at National Cannabis Radio, NCR420.com. Also on today's show at half past, we're going to be talking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine live from SUNY Albany. He's going to take your calls and your questions through our chat line. You can dial in at 971-533-7111 or just get to our chat at NCR420.com, and you can ask him all your questions questions about science, history, culture, and health of marijuana and its users. And then at 45 after, we're continuing National Cannabis Coalition Week with Anthony Johnson. He is the executive director of the National Cannabis Coalition. He'll be coming in here to talk about his career in marijuana reform, stretching all the way back to Missouri and now here in Oregon, and what the future holds for the National Cannabis Coalition. Get involved. Join us. You can text Russ to 420-420 to find out more information. We'll be right back after this break. Stick around. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on National Cannabis Radio. Love y'all. Be back right after this.
Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. I smoke marijuana. You're listening to Radical Russ. Oh, marijuana. On the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, marijuana. Yeah. Oh, I got my ganja.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Smells like a skunk. Marijuana is not going to re-legalize itself. You've got to do your part. Join the National Cannabis Coalition today at nationalcannabiscoalition.com. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
The pressure at the Justice Department over the failed Fast and Furious operation reached the nation's highest office today. President Obama this morning evoked his executive privilege to withhold documents and communication records from a congressional oversight committee who has been seeking answers over the death of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. This is the first time as president of the United States that Obama has asserted the executive privilege of withholding documents from Congress. And in this breaking news alert, the oversight committee voted about an hour ago to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt by a vote of 23-17. Earlier this month, Attorney General Eric Holder was the subject of congressional hearings by the Oversight Committee, who have charged the Obama administration with showing a disregard for the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law in an effort to impose their agenda on the American people. Committee members have said that efforts to block congressional inquiries about the administration's actions in Operation Fast and Furious are an attempt to hide those responsible for the decisions that led to the death of Agent Brian Terry. Terry was killed by a rifle purchased with knowledge under the Fast and Furious program, where DEA agents were letting weapons freely move across the U.S.-Mexican border, called gunwalking, in hopes of pinning future charges on drug gang leaders. The Justice Department has admitted to having over 140,000 internal documents that reference the operation, but so far they've only handed over 7,600 of them to the congressional investigator. Congressman Daryl Issa, the Republican chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, has been locked in a heated exchanges with Holder, both in chamber and in public. Now, for their part, the Obama administration says that they may be able to find a compromise, even though the committee seemed intent on voting for contempt, to which Issa replied, quote, "Our purpose has never been to hold the attorney general in contempt. Our purpose has always been to get the information the committee needed to complete its work. It's not only entitled to, but obligated to do." Daryl Issa has implied that some communication documents might include the president himself as the reason the administration is withholding those. Following the move by the White House, Speaker of the House John Boehner denounced the president's actions, saying, quote, "Until now, everyone believed that the decisions regarding Fast and Furious were confined to the Department of Justice. The White House decision to invoke executive privilege implies that the White House officials were either involved in the Fast and Furious operation or the cover-up that followed. Now, the White House is accusing the Republicans of playing politics running up to the election, holding the attorney general in contempt to create a scandal. We will continue to monitor the developments in the fallout over Fast and Furious, which is a drug war tactic with many more deaths to blame on top of the death of Agent Brian Terry.
Yeah, this is an absolute outrage by the executive office of the president here for the administration to be stonewalling the Department of Justice when they're trying to seek out the facts, trying to find out, get to the bottom of what's going on in this. We have got to hold the Bush administration and Attorney General Gonzalez's feet to the fire on... Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading one of my rants from the Bush administration days when they did the exact same damn thing, except that was over torture and lying us into a war. Look, I don't want to give Obama a free pass on this by any means. This Fast and Furious operation is just one more scandal in the drug war. This is a drug war scandal. Could have happened during the Bush administration, could have happened during the Obama administration. But President Obama, you need to come clean on this. This can be used against you in the election, and you did promise the most transparent administration of our lifetime. So let's get some more transparency here. But I know what's going to happen in this is a bunch of the right-wing commentators and the Fox News are going to blow this up as being some sort of crazy, you know, a breach of trust or constitutional crisis between Congress and the president, as if it's something new. I mean, I remember going back to the 90s when it took a stain on a blue dress to get Congress to act on impeaching a president. But when the president before that was trading arms for hostages, we didn't really go that far, right? It really seems interesting to me that when we've got a Democrat in office, we got Republican Congresses that are more than willing to pull the trigger on contempt of Congress, on holding hearings, on trying to rein in the executive power. But when it's the Republicans in office, the Democrats refuse to hold up to that same standard that the Republicans would and get tough on the executive office and rein them in. How many abuses and oversights and malfeasance of the Bush administration could have been brought to heel if Democrats were as tough on that, on war, on the financial stuff that was going on as the Republicans are being on this Fast and Furious. Now, it's not to minimize Fast and Furious, but again, here's another instance where all of a sudden we're really up in an outrage because a white American died, but there's 50,000 dead Mexicans over this drug war that Fast and Furious is part of contributing to, but has gone on long before Obama got into office. This is a pox on both of their houses, Republicans and Democrats. Republicans for trying to get away with it for so long, Democrats for letting him get away with it, Obama for trying to just use the same powers that Bush had accreted during his time in office and not doing something as a constitutional scholar to try to rein that power in. It's time we get the money out of this. It's time we get some power back to the people in on this. And the first step is sunlight, disinfectant for all of these backroom deals. And we want to know who was doing what when. If the Obama administration was part of this Fast and Furious, it's time to get that out on the table. But no, it's not going to happen because we're doing election year politicking right now. They don't want to have a big scandal to have to deal with, anything to deflect attention away from their campaign talking points in trying to beat Mitt Romney this November. But this Fast and Furious scandal is not going away. We can see guys like Daryl Issa, who are among my least favorite people in Congress, let's say it nicely, are going to keep pushing this because it's an election year. And I'm just afraid that the big scandal of this, the fact that it's a drug war in the first place that led to having Fast and Furious in the first place, gets swept under the rug. Everybody wants to make this a Watergate thing. Ooh, the president's withholding documents. It's secret. It's conspiracy. Yeah, okay, whatever, but that ignores the big elephant in the room, and that is 50,000 dead Mexicans, a $1 billion underground industry in this country that could be well taken by American farmers, American growers, American distributors, instead of being outloaded to the Mexicans and to the people out of this country. Let's get serious about this and start looking at the root cause here. So long as the war on drugs exists, we are going to continue to have scandals like Fast and Furious and whatever the next scandal is, which I'm sure will be much worse.
And Uruguay made a bold move today in cannabis law reform. A group of the ruling party's lawmakers lawmakers introduced a bill to the Uruguayan Congress today that asks to legalize the sales of marijuana. The bill is intended to cut down on crime in the country by taking the profit margins out of the black market marijuana sales and also to divert users of harder drugs. The law would allow the sale of marijuana, but only by the Uruguay government and only to adults who are registered as cannabis users. It is a system that might look a bit like the one in Spain, where you can register as a cannabis user, then join a collective to buy your marijuana. Only if this bill is passed, you would purchase joints from a certified retailer, according to Uruguay newspapers. Now, there is no current laws that outlaw marijuana use in the South American country, and it is up to a judge's discretion if police find you with an amount that is for personal use or enough to be guilty of marijuana sales. There is a provision in the bill for people who are identified as purchasing more than a set limit of marijuana cigarettes every month. They will be asked to complete a drug awareness program that is run with money from the taxation of the marijuana. Now, this bill has a long way to go, but it may become part of a sweeping set of reforms, all aimed at crime reduction, since the country has recently seen a surge in crime and homicide rates.
Well, that's kind of interesting coming out of Uruguay. You know, we see all sorts of interesting things from Latin America and South America in dealing with their drug issues. They treat it more as a decriminalized kind of a public health thing. I like that thing where they say if they had buy more than a certain number of cigarettes per month. How many was it, Carrie, that they were talking about?
You know, it didn't say in the papers, and actually the actual language of the bill wasn't released to the public. This was all from the papers that reporters who had just been at the hearing that had been reporting. So we don't know the exact language of the bill. They just mentioned that there would be some set limit.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, you buy more than 20 joints a month or something like that, and you got to take drug awareness classes. Wouldn't that be neat if we had that for cigarettes or alcohol? You buy more than a case of beer a week, you gotta go to alcohol awareness. Nah, don't see that happening anytime soon in America.
And a government survey published at the beginning of this month showed that teenagers were smoking more marijuana than they were tobacco. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention have been tracking teen risk behaviors and smoking rates for a few decades now. The Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System is that survey that monitors six different types of health risky behaviors that contribute to the top causes of death or disability among teens. Now, the published results were the basis for a brand new study that came out today that looked at those same teen marijuana use rates, but only in relation to legalized medical marijuana. Economists at three universities analyzed the data from that youth risk survey from 1993 to 2009, and they looked at the use rates in Alaska, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington, all states that have legalized the medical use of marijuana. They looked at the data from whether the teen was offered marijuana on school property to see if the increase in medical marijuana in the market led to more marijuana being sold and used in schools. The researchers said they found no evidence that legalization of medical marijuana increased the likelihood that a teenager was being offered drugs at school. Daniel Reese, a professor of economics at the University of Colorado Denver, said that there is anecdotal evidence of medical marijuana finding its way into the hands of teenagers, but there is just no statistical evidence that medical marijuana legalization increases probability of use. Now, the study has been made available by the nonprofit Institute for the Study of Labor that is based in Bonn, Germany, and it has not yet been peer-reviewed. Now, the nation's drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske, the director for the Office of the National Drug Control Policy, told reporters earlier this year that teen marijuana use was on the rise in part because medical marijuana had been legalized. He told the Los Angeles Times, quote, "We know that any substance that is legally available is more widely used. Now, while we still have to wait for evidence of that in adults, at least this study says that that isn't the case when it comes to teenagers."
Well, this is something we've known for a while. Dr. Mitch has looked at this data, and others have looked at this data, and it's just good to get more confirmation that passing a medical marijuana law, you know, legalizing the use of cannabis medicinally by certain adults for certain conditions, does not lead to an increase or decrease in the teens' use of marijuana. There are very complex reasons for why people will use marijuana. It has to do with availability of other drugs, these perceptions of drugs, the economy, how much money you've got, whether you can afford to buy weed can make a big difference. All of these things seem to have greater factors. Parental involvement. These things can have much more influence on whether a kid uses drugs than whether or not granny can get some weed for her glaucoma, okay? This is the thing, too, that I think a lot of the moralizers don't think about, is that by normalizing marijuana use and recognizing its medicinal use, you kind of take away that forbidden fruit aspect of it to kids. You take away that novelty that you could be somehow be cooler or something wild is going to happen if you smoke pot. Because really, when you get down to it, smoking weed isn't that exciting. It makes you feel good. It makes other things, you know, sensory-wise feel good to you and so forth. But it's not the mind-blowing experience that, you know, kids kind of make it out to be. So the more normalized it gets, I'm not surprised that we're not seeing more kids smoke pot.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Why, yes, I have. I have met that funny reefer man, and we'll meet him when we come back around the break here. 20 after, time to get Irie. It's Irie Wednesday with Wiz Calico. Some music from the Black Seeds coming up next. Stick around. It's National Cannabis Radio.
Talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Which of you are ready to admit to having used marijuana in the past? And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
Well, you know, I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never used marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
A little wine, everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine, everything will be just fine.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together. So let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Irie Wednesday, and we got some great music we're going to play for you here from the Black Seeds. It's a song entitled Cool Me Down, and Wiz Calico is going to bring it to us just as soon as we have Wiz Calico back in his chair. He disappeared on us. He just got up and left. He had it. He quit.
He had it. I think he quit.
He's out. So I got to find this song on Calico's machine, and we'll play that here in a second. In the meantime, play some bed music. This is some Revolution with Comfort Zone.
Thank you.
Cool Me Down, that's the Black Seeds. Wiz Coleco is back.
I'm back, hey.
What happened, man?
You know, I was just getting ivy outside instead of doing my job here. I apologize. But if you guys like this stuff, check them out at blackseeds.com. Of course, Easy Star Records, easystar.com. I love those guys. So.
And tell them about Ivy Island Hour tonight.
Ivy Island Hour tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific at ncr420.com.
All right, we'll see you later. Be back right after this with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and your live questions. You're listening to National Cannabis Radio.
When I was in college, I used to drink a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now that I'm older, I prefer to use marijuana. It's less harmful to my body, I don't get hungover, and honestly, I feel safer around marijuana users. I hope this makes sense, but if not, let's talk. I love you.
TalkItUpColorado.org. Start your conversation about marijuana, paid for by the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol.
Attention, National Cannabis Radio listeners. If you haven't heard the political pontifications of Lively and Mr. Libra on the Libra Lounge yet, be sure to visit here Wednesday nights at 6 Pacific or visit thelibralounge.com for archives and links to download current episodes. Be a lounger.
The Libra Lounge.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, everybody, welcome to our regular Wednesday segment here, Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
Happy summer equinox.
Indeed, happy one to you.
Getting hot out there yet?
It's been the hottest day we've had so far.
All right. Hey, at the beginning of this segment, we like to give people a chance to get some time so they can build up their questions, get them in on our chat room live here at NCR420.com, and you can call in live at 971-533-7111. The number's right there on the screen. You can just call right in. And but to give them some time, we always let Dr. Mitch open up with what the latest is in cannabis science, studies, surveys, and polling. So, Dr. Mitch, what's new?
A wild thing going around now about, of all things, flaxseed and flax fiber. Basically, we've known that this has some anti-inflammatory properties, but new data showing up today suggesting that it probably works in the cannabinoid system, much like cannabidiol does. And I just think it's neat that suddenly we have a plant that's well-known that's bragging about how it works sort of like cannabis. I really got a big kick out of that.
Yeah, you know, like we often say, if we discovered cannabis suddenly in the rainforest, if nobody'd ever heard of it and we discovered it in the rainforest, they'd be just bragging about all the amazing things that it can do. But boy, since it's that wacky tobacco, boy, we can't talk about it much, can we?
Timing is everything, I'm afraid.
All right. Get your questions in here in our chat room and call ins at 971-533-7111. We were talking in the news today about the latest surveys that pretty much were the same kind of data that you found when you took a look at this, and that is the teen use of marijuana, the teen perceptions of marijuana, and the legalization or decriminalization of marijuana in the medical and decrim states. So did you see anything new or any comments you wanted to have on the way that these three researchers came to their conclusions?
I mean, the bottom line on this is now, I mean, we've clearly got enough data to show that decrim states and medical marijuana states are not showing meaningful increases in teen use, and we do have the occasional example where teen use actually drops. So the whole argument that this sends the wrong message or somehow is a freak out is really moot now, and I would love to just see this stuff get laid to rest because it's just so ridiculous.
Is there a message that is sent to the kids by legalizing the medicinal use of cannabis? I always say it sends the message that, you know, it's okay for granny to treat her glaucoma.
Well, I think anytime we'd say here's a humane way for people to help the sick, that's the kind of message we want to send. Every single religion I know, every single atheist I know all says, hey, here's a great good deed. Let's help the people who need help.
All right. We've got a question coming in from our chat room here at NCR420.com. James in Seattle wants to know, how close are we to finding a roadside test that effectively tests for marijuana? Well, he says intoxication. I'm going to say impairment. How close are we to that?
So the clincher is that some modest changes to the one we've been using for alcohol is pretty good, about as good as the one we have for alcohol. And with a little more research on this topic, I think we could be there in 9 months or so. Unfortunately, getting funding for this kind of thing is really hairy right now and would require actually getting folks intoxicated in the lab, which has turned into a giant hassle because you need approval from the DEA and you need that special cannabis from the University of Mississippi. So despite how promising the initial data are, I'm a little apprehensive about it. But, boy, I'd sure like to see it happen.
Now, would that situation be ameliorated any by the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and or Washington?
I mean, I so envy everybody who's doing research in either of those states because this would be a big chance to jump right on that. And already the roadside sobriety test is really close, like 60% accurate. And I feel like with some modest changes, we could get it up to an acceptable level, and it would be so much better than these ridiculously invasive and inaccurate blood and urine screens.
Now, when we're talking about this roadside test, let's just be clear. We're talking about being able to detect whether or not someone is too impaired by the use of cannabis to be behind the wheel, not metabolites or just past use.
That's the beauty of it, is it's really a whole lot like those ones that you see all the time, where it's walking a straight line and follow my finger and juggle and the unicycle. And basically, if you can do all those things, then you're perfectly capable of driving. And the correlates between that and actual driving simulation stuff and Roadside driving is pretty good, and we just need it to get a little more accurate with the cannabis stuff, and we would be in business.
We know from our polling that one of the, maybe the biggest thing alongside what about the children, is what about the stone drivers when we find, you know, in polling what causes people to want to vote against legalization. Well, I'd vote for legalization, but I'm worried about, you know, the stone drivers. Given that a verifiable and accurate roadside detection system would possibly alleviate those fears from a large number of voters, could that be why there's not a lot of political will to want to, you know, solidify this research?
I'm afraid so, and I feel a little guilty because my student Allison Luby and I basically showed that when you word the question in the poll of, hey, if we had an accurate roadside sobriety test, would you support legalization? The number of folks who support it really goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, oh, this is a good thing, but now I'm afraid that that has actually increased some of the foot dragging on this kind of research.
Okay. I have to ask you an important question, been in the news a lot lately. We've got a caller, though. We'll take the call first. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. What's your question?
Hi, Russ. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead. We got a bit of a delay, so go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, that's what happened there. Dr. Mitch, I'm a registered patient in the state of Vermont. I was wondering if you had any experience with patients in Vermont and the system in Vermont?
I know two patients there, and it's not the easiest thing. I know that.
Yeah, I volunteered to get in touch with you outside this program to give you any information I could if you're interested.
I really appreciate it.
All right. So when you're in Vermont, you know, I know that the condition list in Vermont is pretty restrictive. And last I heard, they had less than 500 patients. They were starting to take applications for something like 4 dispensaries or compassion centers or whatever they call money walks in, marijuana walks out in that state. How has your experience with the program been? Caller?
I think I might have screwed up. I dropped the call.
Oh, that's okay. Well, we'll find out more about that. I know. I think that's our regular Vermont caller.
Yeah.
I love that, getting more information from the New England medical states, too, because here in the West, we don't often hear a lot about that. All right. Dr. Mitch, I got to get this question in because it's in the news a lot lately. Zombies. It seems to be we've got zombies, people eating people's faces off, and they're blaming bath salts and zombie apocalypse. So what can you tell us about these bath salts and these cases that have been in the news lately and all the hype and hoopla surrounding them?
The sad thing is some of the initial data on actual zombies, we're trying to essentially address this idea as a root-based hallucinogen that was somehow inducing this bogus coma that was actually making people sort of brain damaged and incapable of performing well and sort of turning them into zombies. That was the original explanation that some researchers who ran down to Africa had in order to get this. The fact that it's turned into bath salts has become this kind of oddball joke, and unfortunately we don't have a ton of data to show that it would increase, say, violent acts, but these individual cases are really getting blown out of proportion. I feel like it's crazy to try to generalize from any individual case to a giant legal precedent. Nevertheless, because we have no data on these nasty bath salts, I really wish people would just use cannabis.
I personally have bought these bath salts, not to use them, and I never have, but just to see what the hell they were. And there's no ingredients list on them, and I bought a couple different kinds, and they all look really, really different. And, I mean, from one brand to another, who knows what's in them? You know, or if they're inert, you know, I mean, it could be some people just getting duped and getting an actual bath salt or getting a drug. I don't know. But I think it's not advisable to put any drug in your body that's not approved by the FDA, especially if you buy it at a head shop.
Yeah. So what are we dealing with these bath salts? What are they? When they talk about the spice and the K2, they always call it synthetic pot. We know that it's really these synthetic cannabinoids that John W. Huffman put together and in a lab somewhere. What are the ingredients in these bath salts?
So, I mean, as Ganjana was saying, there's a lot of variants. We've mm-hmm. seen two that are basically things that have just numbers and letters that are loosely related to the stimulant family. And the fact that we don't really know how they work is kind of spooky. And then there was another one that is loosely related to the empathogens, a little bit like MDA, the precursor to MDMA. But again, man, we're just on another planet here. We really know nothing, and the potential for toxicity is high, and just not a toy, not something to play with.
And the potential for toxicity of anything you chop up and put into your nose is never, ever a good idea, ever. I mean, what comes in a powder form that looks like that? Baking soda. I wouldn't want to snort baking soda.
Not a good idea.
No.
Yeah, generally, especially as you get older, white powders are bad. And
yes.
That can be flour, sugar, salt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get older, it's a little tougher. All right, we've got just a little bit of time to take a few more questions here for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can get in on our chat at ncr420.com. Our phone number is 971-533-7111. And as we wind up here, Dr. Mitch, just to take that idea of the bath salts a little further, these bath salts, the people are taking them to mimic other drugs. And we reported previously on how the U.S. military, of course, the Air Force, regularly gives pep pills to their pilots flying back, these long trips overseas in these bomber jets and fighter jets from Afghanistan and so forth, forms of amphetamines that they're given. So is there in the future, or is there a reason to believe that we could have a society where all drugs are legal and regulated and, inspected for purity and labeled, and be able to have a society where, sure, somebody might take an amphetamine and that's their right to do so?
In fact, when you start looking at basically arguments for civil liberties that are consistent with that, they tend to run the gamut of, hey, this is my body, I should be able to do whatever I want, particularly if I'm informed. I'm completely behind that, but I really want to make sure the education behind it is real.
Mm-hmm.
I know a number of vets now who informally have reported that they've been on modafinil and some of the other sort of narcolepsy-type drugs when they were overseas, and it may have been adaptive in a short-term situation where you really did need that stimulation, but I do want to emphasize that we need to understand the long-term effects. These drugs can have cardiac impacts when you're older that you really don't want to hassle with, and knowing that ahead of time and not assuming invulnerability or the idea that, hey, if this is legal, therefore it must be good, is just going to have to be part of regular drug education that we all got in grade school.
I think it's perfectly okay for someone to go to their doctor and say, hey, I'm going on a road trip, I need a little bit of speed. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, if I went to my doctor and said that, he would say, now, John, you have kidney problems that can lead to high blood pressure, and you could have some sort of episode or something bad happen to you. But there's nothing wrong with a perfectly healthy person to take some speed so they don't fall asleep on the road and kill me and my family. I mean,
well, and then wouldn't it be nice to have genuine speed at a reasonable
clean.
Dosage that you actually knew instead of some weird black pill that you have no idea what it is?
Absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. And, God knows what people give you. And, there's all these kids who are looking for Adderall for that very reason. They want some sort of legal, clean speed, and that's exactly what they're trying to look for. And it's not available, just like marijuana is not available.
Yeah. We see it in our society, too. I see the commercials with the 5-hour energy guy, the cowboy, walks into the workplace and, you're going to load up on coffee, or do you want the real man's 5-hour energy? We got a society that kind of feels that way already. It's just who's making the profit off that thing, I suppose, is the important part. All right.
I do want to emphasize that I'd just rather see all of us, get a 20-minute meditation in and maybe not be in such a hurry to get where we're going.
That would be ideal for sure. So I guess I could rephrase the question in another way too. Would a world with legal cocaine and speed be any worse than people taking bath salts and not knowing what the hell they're getting?
I think not, and I think also under those circumstances, nobody wants to see intranasal cocaine sold at the 7-Eleven.
God, no.
But imagine a coca leaf gum that folks could get that would have a much lower dosage, and it would be orally absorbed and still have comparable effects without leading to outrageous delusional heights of euphoria that have a high addictive potential, and you could still sort of take advantage of the fact that that plant is on Earth.
Mm-hmm. I swear to God, Russ, it's like this guy's reading my mind.
I know. Dr. Mitch has those special powers. You got to be careful. All right, we got to call it a day for today's cannabis Q&A, but I want to thank everyone who's called in, been hanging out in the the chat room and helping us out. And Dr. Mitch will be talking to you next week. The 4th of July week, of course, we'll have off. So next week, and then we'll have a week off, and then we'll continue the conversations. And thank you so much for being with us. And everybody loves getting the true facts, the real information behind cannabis science. Thanks for being here.
You guys do a great service. Thank you.
All right. We'll keep doing it because that's what we do here at National Cannabis Radio. We're all about facts, science, reason, and logic. With those, we cannot be defeated. We will continue to bring you all of that here at National Cannabis Radio. When we come back, we got Anthony Johnson, the executive director from the National Cannabis Coalition, joining us. We'll talk about his history in marijuana law reform, the future of the National Cannabis Coalition, and other topics. We'll also take your calls in hour two at 971-533-7111. You're listening to National Cannabis Radio. We're back right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Normal Network brings you the best in daily Toker tunes at 3 and 9 o'clock Pacific Time, AM and PM, every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy the Moocher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
Summer ganja planter. Call me the ganja farmer.
Groovin' Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Friday.
Some they like to hit the ball. Some just took the vibe.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first at the
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's 49 after the hour, and we are joined here at the table by Anthony Johnson. He's the executive director of the National Cannabis Coalition. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
I got to say welcome back because you've been to the studio before, but to this show for the first time, so we're glad to have you here. National Cannabis Coalition, brand new organization. Tell people about when it got formed and why it got formed.
National Cannabis Coalition got formed officially. We had our launch on April 20th.
And, how amazing, how coincidental is that?
Yeah, definitely an appropriate date. And it was formed to really help push the message to get beyond reefer madness and to unite around various electoral opportunities, be it measures, initiatives, and campaigns to rally around across the country to move us forward to finally end cannabis and hemp prohibition.
All right. Well, you've got the name Coalition in the title, so that implies that we've got many groups working together. So tell us who's involved in this coalition.
Yeah, so we have organizations here in Oregon working together. I'm also on the board of Oregon Green Free. You guys, we just did the live feed from the Oregon Green Free Care Growers Cup. And we have the Show Me Cannabis Show Me Cannabis Regulation Group in Missouri, doing good work in Missouri. And we have our research director in D.C. doing good lobbying work and working with SSDP chapters in D.C. And we're here to work with any and all organizations that want to move this movement forward.
Yeah, that's really good news to me, because one of the things, you know, I've been involved in the marijuana law reform movement, moved to Oregon specifically for it. You know, there's many groups that are working. And so what inspired you to start another group when there's already so many groups involved?
Yeah, it just seemed like there was a void to really put together research as well as political work.
Okay.
And I really love our website, bringing you guys on, then launch a National Cannabis Radio. And I see that we've filled a void of research, political work, as well as kind of independent kind of media type, you know, to be a little like marijuana Huffington Post kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're bringing a lot of talent together that really wasn't there for with other organizations.
Yeah, I know that we've had the guys from the Weed Blog are involved. We've got them doing a lot of great writing. And National Cannabis Coalition is also part of a larger coalition. Tell them about American Victory.
Yeah, American Victory Coalition is our parent division, and the American Victory Coalition works to protect and improve civil liberties for all citizens across the board, not just ending cannabis prohibition, but ending the drug war in general, working to improve our civil liberties so we don't have American citizens jailed and imprisoned without a trial indefinitely, and also you know, civil rights issues such as ending the prohibition of marriage equality.
All right. Well, Anthony Johnson's the executive director of National Cannabis Coalition. Check out the website, nationalcannabiscoalition.com, or if that's too much typing, ncc420.com. You can find out more information. And you mentioned the fight for civil rights with American Victory Coalition. So is National Cannabis Coalition poised to treat this as a civil rights issue, marijuana legalization?
It's definitely a civil rights issue. Medical cannabis users and recreational cannabis users face discrimination amongst, you know, for no reason in a variety of areas, and housing and jobs and child welfare services and just the general in society. And it's the next, I think gay marriage and cannabis use are next civil rights issues for our generation to tackle.
You know, speaking of that, I just wrote up a post today, and I think I've got it up on NCC's blog as well. If not, it will be. And I was looking at the polling. We've seen the polling in Colorado for their Amendment 64 has come up at something like 61% support. Polling in Washington State's about 50% support with 37 opposed, 39, something like that. I think it's 37 opposed. Washington State's an interesting situation because you've got two social issues on the ballot. Our I-502 legalization initiative, and the referendum to overturn marriage equality for gay and lesbian people in Washington State. Politically, do you see that as a problem for legalization, in that it may bring out a whole bunch of conservative voters who might have otherwise stayed away from the polls, maybe not been too keen on Mitt Romney, for example, and might, you know, cause problems for the chance of legalization in Washington State?
It's hard to say where it's going to go. It's definitely going to bring out Christian conservatives who maybe would have stayed home, but it's also hopefully going to bring out young people who may not necessarily would have came out to vote for the marijuana issue, but may come out for gay marriage. And the polls that I've shown have actually seen, I thought gay marriage polled maybe a couple points higher than I-502. And so I really think with a good education campaign, and I look forward to National Cannabis Coalition and the American Victory Coalition hopefully running ads in Washington in support of gay marriage equality and legalizing marijuana for all adults. And I think with a lot of education, we can activate our base and get them out to vote and have victories on both of these issues.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. You know, interesting numbers from the polling as well. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer was reporting this today, that among the Republicans, they found only 10% opposed to the referendum, which means 10% in support of banning gay marriage, but 22% in support of the 502 legalization. So it seems even among the Republicans that are generally against it, support is twice as great for marijuana legalization as it is for the marriage referendum.
Yeah, I'm not really that much surprised by that. You're seeing that in polls across the country where marriage equality is ticking up and up and up, but it seems that the support to ending cannabis prohibition has surpassed it and across the nation, which has really surprised me that President Obama has come out in support personally for marriage equality, but has really thrown cannabis users under the bus. And I think that cannabis use is actually more popular across the board than marriage equality.
Yeah, and we will talk about some of those political aspects too as we take things into Hour 2 in Toker Talk Radio. But before we end up Hour 1's podcast, I want to make sure to find out more about National Cannabis Coalition and what are some of the plans for the future. I mean, this is a huge year, 2012, with legalization in two states. We got the medical marijuana referendum in Montana, things going on all over the country. So what are some of the plans coming up here for 2012? For NCC.
Yeah, so we plan on helping the cause out of Montana, helping the legalization measures in Colorado and Washington. If Oregon gets on the ballot, you can see us helping out Oregon as well. We look to get involved in a couple of political races. We're monitoring a Tennessee legislative race right now where two Democratic incumbents have been redistricted into the same district. And one of the candidates, Beverly Marrera, she supports medical marijuana, has introduced medical marijuana legislation every year in Tennessee. So we're looking to support her. And we're monitoring a congressional race in North Humboldt. I think they kind of got a recount going on to see who's going to be in a runoff there, and it's possible we may have a pro marijuana decrim congressman running against an anti, and so we'd like to get involved in that race as well. So we're really looking to get involved in races where we can make a big impact. And we also will be doing research showing what legalization or ending prohibition for cannabis as well as hemp can do to the economic impacts in various states across the country.
You know, NCC made a big splash here in Oregon on the political scene with the campaign for attorney general between Dwight Holton and the presumptive attorney general here, the Democratic nominee now, Ellen Rosenblum. Name was escaping me for a second. But Holton's camp called the group out by name, did he not?
He did. He, in a fundraising letter asking for more cash, he called out National Cannabis Coalition as one of the organizations bringing in weed money to support his opponent, and it was one of the more prouder moments I've had in cannabis activism, I must say.
We will talk about more of those activism moments because Anthony's got a long history coming here from out of state, and we'll talk about what he did back in Missouri, what he's doing here in Oregon, and more on the future of marijuana legalization, not just in Oregon, but around the country with one of the most informed political activists, Anthony Johnson from the National Cannabis Coalition. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for this first hour for our podcast. We appreciate having you here. Please text Russ to 420-420. Make your support known. Donate for someone who can't donate and keep the show on the air. We appreciate every dime. We will get this legal in our lifetimes, and if not sooner. So stick around for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. For Ganja John, Wiz Kaliko, and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.